This week, Armenia and Azerbaijan, neighbours in the South Caucasus, went to war again. Not for the first time. The cause at issue is the overwhelmingly Armenian enclave which lies inside Azerbaijan, Nagorno-Karabakh. As Armenia and Azerbaijan emerged into independence from the unravelling Soviet Union in the late 1980s and early 1990s, the two countries fought a long and brutal war over Nagorno-Karabakh. This was ended by a ceasefire in 1994, since when Nagorno-Karabakh has operated with an uneasy autonomy. In the decades since, escalations in tensions have been an irregular fact of life along the so-called line of contact, which separates the sides. In 2016, dozens of soldiers died in 4 days of fighting. Earlier this year, in clashes along the border between Armenia and Azerbaijan north of Nagorno-Karabakh, several more troops were killed, including an Azerbaijani general. The latest fighting looks more serious still. Heavy weapons and air power have been deployed. Many casualties, including civilians, have been reported. And both Azerbaijan's ally Turkey and Armenia's patron Russia are taking an unnervingly close interest. Why has this flared up again? And why now? Could this result in a full-scale war? And is there any imaginable long-term solution? This is the Foreign Desk.
We made a lot of reports talking to people, and they are certain to stay there. I mean, they said we're not going to leave our house. This is our home. But also, I mean, I see a lot of women and children transferred to Yerevan or to Armenia, other towns of Armenia, because it is not safe. I mean, the civilians are targeted heavily.
No matter what happens, this is going to have massive reverberations in both Armenia and Azerbaijan, both politically and amongst the publics of these countries. The question is not, can the conflict be solved? The only question now is how the damage can be mitigated and how can we avoid absolute catastrophe.
Often we've seen how politicians in Azerbaijan have used this conflict to make political advances for their own status quo. But given that context, people always considered Karabakh as an issue, and now seeing these escalations, it's not surprising to see why there's so much enthusiasm and euphoria.
Hello and welcome to the Foreign Desk. I'm Andrew Muller. I'm joined first of all from Yerevan by Sirenush Gavorgian, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Yerevan Bureau Director and Editor-in-Chief for its Armenian service. Yerevan, like the rest of Armenia, is now under martial law and a general mobilization has been declared. Sirenush, first of all, what does Yerevan feel like right now? Does it feel like a city on a war footing?
Well, I have to note that Yerevan is far away from Nagorno-Karabakh. That distance is about 300 or 400 kilometers. So we don't feel the hard consequences of war right now here. But it is a war and there's a general mobilization. So you can see signs of this general mobilization. People get notices, mainly men, from their military committees when they have to leave for Nagorno-Karabakh. So you see a lot of large groups of men at their military gathering points who wait their turns to go to Nagorno-Karabakh. And there are like tons of points in Yerevan, volunteers working, collecting food, I don't know, clothes for Nagorno-Karabakh people or army or soldiers. So this is the main impression of mine.
What's your sense of the feeling around these measures, the martial law, the general mobilization, all that activity you were describing? Is this something people actually want? Do they want some sort of confrontation with Azerbaijan?
I don't think that they want a confrontation with Azerbaijan, but they feel that they have to fight. I mean, we did a lot of reports, talked to people. Armenians want peace, but the main sense is that if the peace is not reached during the negotiations or through the negotiations, their main duty is to go and fight and win this peace because the negotiations are like futile.
So in Armenia itself, does this feel different to previous flare-ups over Nagorno-Karabakh, of which there have been several over the last years and decades? Does this feel like a much, much bigger deal?
Of course it does. It's a much, much bigger deal. Basically, it's a large-scale war along the line of this contact line in all over Nagorno-Karabakh. So this is hugely different from the last flares. You can't compare these flares. This is huge. This is very huge, really.
So when you've been speaking to your reporters in Nagorno-Karabakh itself, what are they telling you about the scale of the fighting?
It's all over the contact line. It's very huge. They use very heavy artillery. Our reporters are not safe. Four reporters were injured. Two of them were from Le Monde, from the French Le Monde. And one of them, the reporter, was in a very serious condition. The Armenian doctors in Nagorno-Karabakh managed to save his life. Now he's safe. But this is like, I don't remember reporters being injured while covering the flare-ups in Nagorno-Karabakh. So this is different. Even the reporters and a lot of civilians are being targeted too.
Is it clear in official messaging in Armenia what the government of Armenia, and it is a reasonably new government under Nikol Pashinyan, it's only been in office since 2018, is it clear what they want from this, what their idea of victory would be?
I mean, Armenians want self-determination of ethnic Armenians living in Nagorno-Karabakh. And the idea is to go back to the negotiations and push harder to reach the self-determination of the Armenians living in Nagorno-Karabakh.
I mean, this is, as you said, a much bigger deal than previous flare-ups over Nagorno-Karabakh, and there are several other external complicating factors, the potential involvement of other countries. Not the least of these is Turkey. Given the obvious history between Turkey and Armenia, how much is that aggravating tensions?
I think it is aggravating greatly. I mean, the stance of official Yerevan is that Turkey wants to return to South Caucasus. Like, you know about our complicated history about the Armenian genocide. Prime Minister Nikol Pashinyan announced that Turkey's involvement means that Armenia is the last remaining obstacle on the way of continued Turkish expansion toward the north, and it's basically the realization of their imperial dream of pan-Turkism. So this makes things harder and more difficult.
So has there been then from the government or from Armenian media suggestion over how people expect the coming days and weeks to play out, whether there will be extensions of the provisions already introduced under martial law, whether they're expecting an escalation in the fighting with Azerbaijan? What do the government appear to be preparing Armenia for?
They constantly say that they want to stop the military actions and they want to return to the negotiations, but Azerbaijan's stance does not allow that because right now the military actions are continuing and it is not possible to negotiate. So that's why the people should be prepared for longer war, I guess. Yeah.
So to go back to Nagorno-Karabakh itself, you have reporters covering the war there. What are they hearing from the people actually in Nagorno-Karabakh? How is this already changing their lives, and what kind of provisions are people going to have to make? Obviously, when there was a big war over Nagorno-Karabakh in the early 90s, we saw tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people being displaced. Is there concern that people might just have to pack up and leave?
We made a lot of reports talking to people and they are certain to stay there. I mean, a lot of people, like they said, we're not going to leave our house. This is our home. We don't want to leave our homeland. But also, I mean, I see a lot of women and children transferred to Yerevan or to Armenia, other towns of Armenia, because it is not safe. I mean, the civilians are targeted heavily.
Serenyush Gavorgian, thank you for joining us. To give us the wider context of the conflict and where it might be heading, I'm joined now by Arzu Geybullah and Peter Liakov. Arzu Geybullah is an Azerbaijani columnist and journalist. She joins us from Istanbul. Peter Liakov is a journalist and documentary filmmaker and editor at Open Caucasus Media. He joins us from Tbilisi. Peter, I will start by asking you, this conflict is a hardy perennial and has been so for nearly 30 years. Do we understand why it has flared up this time?
I think we do. I mean, not for certain, obviously, but we can say with some confidence, I think, that we kind of know why it's happening now. And I think this is something that's happening both sort of at a micro level and at a macro level. At the micro level, most recently you had clashes between Armenia and Azerbaijan in July. And during these clashes, an Azerbaijani general was killed. And following that, there was a massive unsanctioned rally in Baku. And you could call it a pro-war rally. And since Azerbaijan is an authoritarian state, I mean, this was almost an unprecedented show of public anger. And I think that this put the Azerbaijani authorities into a difficult position, especially because so much of their legitimacy is based around Karabakh. They were put into a position where this war was made much more likely. So this is why I think it happened sort of in this past year. But I think there's also bigger structural issues. In Azerbaijan, you've had an economic decline in large part tied to the fall in oil prices and basically a faltering legitimacy of the Azerbaijani authorities. And this makes it that much more important for them to come off sort of as patriotic and right on the Nagorno-Karabakh issue, which is very important for the Azerbaijani public. And if I could add one more thing, at the very macro level, I think that basically the decline of American power more generally might have emboldened Turkey to become a much more vocal supporter and possibly a participant in this conflict, which would have emboldened Azerbaijan.
We'll come back to Turkey's potential role and the possible broader conflict a bit later. But Arzu, I want to come back to you with that curious demonstration that Peter mentioned earlier this year in Baku. You don't see an awful lot of large-scale pro-war demonstrations around the world. Usually when demonstrations are about war, they're very much against it. And I think for that reason, a lot of people who saw that demonstration reported, assumed that it had been something at least partially staged by the government. Is it actually the case that that was a fairly organic occasion?
You know, I'm of the opinion that it was fairly organic. I mean, going back to what Peter said earlier, with the killing of the general, this was the first time in pretty much since, you know, the ceasefire was signed 26 years ago, when a high-ranking officer was killed as a result of the tensions. And as Peter mentioned, you know, this was a long time coming. This frustration was really sort of boiling and it was in the making. And I think the killing of the general really kicked off this much heightened conversation around Nagorno-Karabakh and the protest as well. I mean, this was also, we need to take into account that this was staged, all that took place when COVID was taking place and Azerbaijan was in quarantine and people were actually not allowed to go on the streets. And so, you know, adding all of that in addition to the growing tensions and growing frustrations on behalf of the government sort of came together in that very open way of expressing how much the people support the government.
So just to follow that up, Arzu, is it then the case that among the actual Azerbaijani public, this is regarded as very much a live and important issue? Because around the world, there are various other territorial disputes. One thinks of Serbia and Kosovo, even Spain and Gibraltar, which are often used as nationalist rallying points by governments. But it's not always that clear how much the actual local public really care one way or the other. But where Azerbaijani people are concerned, Nagorno-Karabakh is still genuinely regarded as a major issue.
It is regarded as a major issue. And in fact, it's the only issue that brings together the opposition and the ruling government. If there's anything that they can agree on, it's on the importance of Nagorno-Karabakh and its status. And among the people, you know, you have to take into account the sort of general understanding of the conflict. For years, ever since the ceasefire, Nagorno-Karabakh has always been on the agenda, especially when you listen to the politicians talk about the future of Azerbaijan. And it was always regarded as part of Azerbaijan, and its independence, its liberation was very much on the agenda. I mean, obviously, the context is very sensitive because the language around the conflict is also very sort of heated. And often we've seen how politicians in Azerbaijan have used this conflict to make political advances for their own status quo. But again, given that context, people always considered Karabakh as an issue. And now seeing these escalations, it's not surprising to see why there's so much enthusiasm and euphoria around these last 5 days of escalated tensions.
Peter, has it been your experience that the same is true of the Armenian public, that they regard this very much as a crucial, important, and very much unresolved issue?
Absolutely. It's of the utmost importance to the Armenian public. The Armenian public sees Nagorno-Karabakh as fundamentally Armenian land, and it's an almost existential question for Armenia. A lot of the narratives around what's happening with Nagorno-Karabakh harken back to the genocide of 1915, where basically the fate of the Armenians in Karabakh is tied to the fate of all Armenians. And in this conflict, it's been particularly acute because of the participation of Turkey.
And just to follow that up, Peter, because what I want to ask you both is an understanding of what either side here sees as any kind of victory. That's what really remains unclear, where either side think they're really going with this. Peter, as Armenia sees it, what should its relationship to Nagorno-Karabakh be?
I mean, that's a difficult question. There are some people who think it should be formally made a part of Armenia. Others believe that the independence of Nagorno-Karabakh should be recognized. The de facto reality is Nagorno-Karabakh is basically... You can't imagine a closer relationship to Armenia. You can't say that it is really a part of Armenia because it does have its own political dynamics, but it is incredibly close. And of course, right now in Karabakh, you have Armenian forces fighting. So I think the political questions of independence or absorption into Armenia are sort of secondary to the actual reality on the ground right now, which is, it's an outgrowth of the Republic of Armenia at this point, politically and materially.
And Arzu, does Azerbaijan, or at least Azerbaijan's government, look at Nagorno-Karabakh and imagine that there actually is a military solution to this? Could they possibly be even considering evicting the entire ethnic Armenian population?
Well, yesterday, President Ilham Aliyev spoke during a visit to a military clinic where he was visiting wounded soldiers. And he said that the only condition upon which he will end the conflict is if the 7 adjacent territories to Nagorno-Karabakh are returned back to Azerbaijan, and if the status of Nagorno-Karabakh is given to Azerbaijan. So basically, his demand is that Armenia withdraws its claims over Nagorno-Karabakh territory. But first and most priority is return of the 7 adjacent territories to Nagorno-Karabakh, which are not part of Nagorno-Karabakh. So I think that's a really important statement that came from the president. And it's been repeated now pretty much ever since the Sunday tensions began by the president. So he's very clear on that. And it's also very interesting to see how this whole conversation around independence of Nagorno-Karabakh is being discussed, because if I'm not mistaken, Armenia has not recognized the independence of Nagorno-Karabakh. And it was one sort of statement that came from the government of Armenia during these past few days was that if Azerbaijan continues this military invasion, then Armenia will recognize the independence of Nagorno-Karabakh. So I think these are very important elements and facts to keep in mind.
Peter, how big an escalation might that be were Armenia to do that? I mean, obviously, it would be very unlikely that any other country on earth would follow suit. So at best, Nagorno-Karabakh could become an equivalent perhaps to the Turkish Republic of Northern Cyprus, which is recognized, obviously, by only one other country, clue in the name, and so on. But would that be regarded as a significant move by Armenia, a major stake of acclaim?
Absolutely. And I think it's likely that it would inflame the conflict even more. I mean, the fighting is already very, very serious, but I think it makes the likelihood of a war between Armenia and Azerbaijan on the territory between these two countries formally, as opposed to sort of limited primarily to Nagorno-Karabakh and the surrounding territories, much more likely.
Arzu, that does introduce the concept which I think a watching world is a bit anxious about, which is that of escalation into either or both a full-scale war between Armenia and Azerbaijan, or an even wider conflict involving other people. Do you think that's more likely this time than it has been with previous flare-ups over Nagorno-Karabakh? And if so, why?
Well, I think, starting with your first question, I mean, the last 2 days have also been interesting in terms of the role of the negotiations negotiators. Well, not the negotiators, but the mediators. The OSCE Minsk group in particular, in this particular conflict, Russia has the sort of the biggest role in mediating, still in mediating as a member of the OSCE Minsk group, as a co-chair of the OSCE Minsk group. And, you know, Lavrov's continuous statements, especially multiple phone calls that he's had since Sunday. And also the statement just came out a little bit before we got together here, a statement by the Russian government. So Putin, Trump, and Macron, the three co-chairs to the Minsk group, repeating that they are calling on the government of Azerbaijan and Armenia to de-escalate and return back to the negotiation table. But as a statement, it's relatively weak because they're not really offering a solution to the conflict, to the tensions right now, which is once again sort of highlights how Minsk group in general has been ineffective in the process of negotiation. I mean, they've been having these meetings, and there may have been a little bit of promise in 2018 when Pashinyan came to power, but ever since then there's been no progress in this regard. So that's one thing to keep in mind. So what I'm trying to say is that there must be some new actors who are coming into play. Maybe someone from the Azerbaijani analyst was mentioning to maybe it needs to be Germany, probably not Turkey, because Turkey has been very outspoken since the start of these most recent tensions, and possibly more interest from the EU. We don't know what type of context we're talking about, but definitely not within the existing context, because it has very much changed since Sunday. As regard to the further outbreak and further war, I mean, this is the last thing I want to see. I mean, even since the Sunday tensions, seeing what's going on is really disturbing, and mass war would lead to mass destruction. And I really hope the two countries will stop before that point. And this is what many other internationals are saying about the current tensions, is that the most important thing right now is to prevent the current tensions from getting to that point. And if it does happen, it would be one of the worst things that could happen in that geography for all of the Southern Caucasus countries.
Peter, Azu there introduces one of the factors which has changed since last time this flared up in a major, major way, and that is the change of government in Armenia, now led by Nikol Pashinyan, who was ushered to power in what was acclaimed as a Velvet Revolution in 2018. Has Azerbaijan possibly calculated that he might be less serious about Nagorno-Karabakh than his more obviously hardline nationalist predecessors?
I don't think so. I mean, while I think after the Velvet Revolution, there was a thaw in relations, which, I mean, looking back to it now, it seems like a completely different world when, you know, the foreign ministers of Armenia and Azerbaijan made a statement where they said, we're going to prepare our populations for peace. So there seemed to be a thaw and a bettering of relations immediately after the Velvet Revolution. But after Nikol Pashinyan's visits to Nagorno-Karabakh, and when he made that statement, Nagorno-Karabakh is Armenia, full stop. I mean, he's basically taken the same line as the previous Armenian authorities had. And so I don't think there's any evidence to see that his position is different from that of his predecessors.
So, Azu, you don't think that might be part of the calculation that Turkey has made as well? Because, again, that seems to be a distinguishing note of this particular flare-up, that Turkey has taken a much more overt interest in Nagorno-Karabakh than it usually does.
Yeah, I mean, Turkey up until now was on the side of de-escalation, and they've been sort of advocating for that ever since. But the fact that Turkey is fully involved in this conflict, I mean, not militarily, but at least in terms of moral support, as they describe it these days, is definitely changing the playing field. I do not really consider the possibility of Turkey getting involved militarily in this conflict, but I certainly do think that Turkish current involvement in the conflict also has to do with its relationship with Russia, whether we're talking about the conflict in Syria or we're talking about the conflict in Libya, and sort of Turkey trying to also take a stronger position in the region and finding Azerbaijan as this ally where they have these long-term relationships. They are calling each other brother countries, brother nations. And I think that really adds to the agenda of this conflict. You know, I feel like what's happening here in Turkey is a miscalculation calculated approach to this conflict, because Azerbaijan and Armenia and Nagorno-Karabakh obviously is not the same as what's going on in Syria or Libya. And Turkey just wanting sort of to show how strong it is or how important it is in the region as an ally is shifting the whole balance of this conflict, of all the relationship that has been developing up until now. And I'm really curious to see at which point, especially on the Turkish side, there's going to be an understanding that this is very different. This is a very different context.
And Peter, does it strike you then that Armenia has any natural allies it will be able to rely on here, either diplomatically or, if it comes to it, militarily? Armenia has historically always been closer to Russia, at least. Has that relationship shifted significantly with the change of government in Yerevan?
The relationship with Russia has become much more difficult for the post-revolutionary Armenian government. The previous authorities had been very, very close to Russia, and the new ones, not so much. I mean, quite famously, the post-revolutionary Armenian government arrested Yuri Khachaturov, who was at the time sort of the sitting secretary of the CSTO, the military alliance, the Russia-led military alliance that Armenia is part of. And in fact, there has been tensions between the Armenian government now and the Russian Federation. Although, of course, in official discourse, you know, they've said that we're still friends, there's a friendship between our peoples and our countries, and so on and so forth. Nevertheless, I mean, Armenia is part of a military alliance with Russia. It has a Russian military base on its territory. And so I think we should really think about the possibility of Russian involvement, especially as Turkey is playing a larger role. And quite recently, the Russians have basically openly stated that they believe that Turkey-backed fighters from Syria and Libya are participating in this conflict. So Russia's basically saying Turkey's in this, and we have to start thinking, how is Russia considering participating? Especially since Russia sees this basically as its backyard. This is their sphere of influence. And I'm sure they are not happy in the least about Turkey trying to muscle in on what they perceive to be their territory.
Arzu, we are already clearly at the stage at which the best that can be hoped for is that this ends up being remembered as yet another relatively short skirmish between Armenia and Azerbaijan over Nagorno-Karabakh. How close do you think we are, though, to the point at which either or both sides feel like they can't walk back?
Well, I think they can't walk back at all at this point, especially if you take into account the hype around these recent tensions. You know, people are expecting something. You know, it's a very different expectation from how it was before Sunday, basically. So if there is all of a sudden a decision on behalf of the government today or tomorrow saying, okay, we're deciding to withdraw, it's going to be a very big blow to their reputation in the country because they've built this whole rhetoric around it. I mean, the government is not disclosing the number of killed soldiers, and they're doing it for a reason in Azerbaijan. And even though there are a lot of posts from and pictures and footage from funerals of the army officers who've been shot and killed during these tensions. So stepping back is not an option for the government at this stage unless they've reached a very different agreement than what they had before. Some solution, some advancement for Azerbaijan. Otherwise, the whole point of starting all of this would be completely lost.
Well, as a final thought then, Peter, if there is to be a yet more significant military conflict, and even if it proceeds, you know, more or less according to Azerbaijan's plans, is there any imaginable way, though, that whatever is about to happen is actually going to end up resolving anything where Nagorno-Karabakh is concerned? Or is this just going to be one of those things that the world keeps having to come back to time and again?
I don't think there is any imaginable settled solution in the near future. No matter what happens, this is going to have massive reverberations in both Armenia and Azerbaijan, both politically and amongst the publics of these countries. The question is not, can the conflict be solved? The only question now is how the damage can be mitigated and how can we avoid absolute catastrophe.
Arzu Gebuller and Peter Liakov, thank you both very much for joining us. That's it for this episode of The Foreign Desk. We'll be back next week, and look out for The Foreign Desk Explainer, available every Wednesday. The Foreign Desk was produced by Yolene Goffin and Christy Evans. Christy also edits the program and The Foreign Desk Explainer. From me, Andrew Muller, thank you very much for listening. Until next time, goodbye.